This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Kick off your future with the law firm of Condori and Murad. They've got a great offer for you right now. They're the sponsor of this show, and the law firm of Condori and Murad will guide you and your family in the right direction by helping you draft your will, set up a revocable trust, create a health care power of attorney, schedule a free consultation with what their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com, and be sure to tell them G&D sent you. Score yourself a great discount. You got to mention Grant and Danny when you go to kmlawyers.com. John Walton's going to join us in a little over 10 minutes. We will end the show with the voice of the Capitals tonight, getting you ready for Washington's massive game. Of course, we're going to be scoreboard watching as well. Need the Red Wings, ideally, to lose in regulation to Montreal. The Penguins, who lost to the Bruins on Saturday night, really dinging their chances to get into the playoffs after a mad dash down the stretch. They got a tough matchup tonight with Nashville. So let's hope the Predators can take care of Pittsburgh. If there's some out-of-town help tonight, Danny, and neither the Red Wings or Penguins gets a point, then Washington with a win would be sitting very pretty. The Red Wings would be eliminated. The Penguins could still get back in the mix as the tiebreaker is with Pittsburgh, but the Caps have a tiebreaker over the Red Wings.
So just to summarize, I have to root against Pittsburgh?
You do.
That's, I don't know if I can stomach that. That's on a nightly basis. I'll be fine there. But yeah, I mean, here's what happens, right? When you go through these, as you mentioned, Pittsburgh had that mad dash to get back into relevancy, including beating the Caps, which stung like a wasp. You leave yourself no margin for error. So the Caps did a huge thing on Saturday by beating the really good Tampa Bay Lightning team. It's pretty much got everything sewed up. Boston does not. They're still fighting for stuff. So you've left it. You've got to, you know, walk into the fire and come out nice and cool on the other side. You can't get burned at all because, you know, a fluky goal, a bad bounce, a bit of bad luck, you outshot, outskated, but, you know, didn't win on the scoreboard. Those kind of things that happen in a sport over 82 games and even a playoff series won't fly because you've got no sort of net here down at the end.
Obama style. Let me be clear. The Capitals can't clinch tonight, even with a win, depending on what happens outside of D.C., because the Flyers, who play them tomorrow night, are 2 points behind Washington, are even with Washington, but have the one game in hand. So the value there is you're essentially could be 2 points better. But if the Caps were to win this evening, and then the Flyers could beat them tomorrow, then the Flyers could still point their way in via tiebreaker. The Caps would need, even if they lost in overtime, just a game to go beyond regulation to clinch. If all the things that they want to happen tonight, mm-hmm. they still need to get a point tomorrow potentially. So bottom line is Red Wings don't get a point. Penguins don't get a point. Caps beat the Bruins. Then both Detroit and Pittsburgh are eliminated, which would be very celebratory. And then tomorrow's game would be effectively, you know, an elimination game, although it gets quirky. If the game doesn't go to overtime and Philadelphia wins, then they can get in via tiebreaker and the Caps would still miss out on the final day of the season. But let's worry about today. Today, we'll talk to John Walton in just a few. We have not talked much about the Nats at all. They had a busy weekend. A couple things on the Nationals series in Oakland. They lost 2 of 3 to the A's, which on the surface is pretty brutal. They had 3 good starts in a row from their rotation. They really should have won that series. Jake Irvin threw 6 innings. I thought he was outstanding. Only allowed 1 hit. He got yanked from the ball game with a low pitch count. And it was pretty obvious. He was super efficient, sub 80 pitches. You know, they ended up getting him out of the game. Part of it maybe is taking care of a young arm. But that was just one of those, like, Tampa Bay Rays rules things where you're not allowed to face a lineup again another time through. But that could have been easily a 7 or 8 inning outing for Jake Irvin. That was game one of the series. He was very good. The Nats that night just couldn't mount any offense and didn't come through with runners in scoring position. So they lose. Game two of the series, the first ever 5-inning, 11-strikeout game. Shutout ball by a Nationals pitcher from Mackenzie Gore. And he was not as efficient as Irvin, but he'd only thrown 90 pitches when he was removed from the game. So that easily could have been a 5 2/3 or 6-inning outing where he threw around 100 or a little over 100 pitches and struck out 12 or 13 possibly. I thought he was awesome. He looked like a front of the rotation, somewhere between an ace and a Cy Young type in terms of how much he dominated and carved up the A's lineup, which is what you're looking for from the former Padre who came over in the Soto deal. And then yesterday, I thought Davey yanked Trevor Williams way too soon. He was at 78 pitches. He was flying through the ball game. He gave up a walk on a terribly umpired at bat where two strikes were called balls, then a double on a first pitch in the middle of the plate. And Davey immediately went to the bullpen, which ended up blowing the game in the underbelly of the middle of the bullpen. I don't know how you felt. I thought that was a terrible botch. Like 78 pitches by Trevor Williams, who's barely broken a sweat. He's one of the few veterans who you can actually lean on to give you some depth and length. You're going into a series today in L.A. against the Dodgers' great lineup, and you already knew you were going to have a rookie starter debuting. I couldn't believe he pulled Trevor Williams when he did. Forget that it backfired, which is important. Mm-hmm. I just thought in general, with the landscape of the staff right now, it didn't make any sense to me.
So, yeah, especially up either 6-0 or 6-1 at that point.
6-1.
Yeah, 6-1. I'd have let him go, certainly, but I think you mentioned the Rays. I think they've probably got rules. And to me, that sounds good in theory, where if you'd asked me before the season, do you want Trevor Williams facing up a lineup three times or turning everyone over and giving everybody a chance to square him up, I'd probably say no. But he's thrown the hell out of the ball. He's been great through three starts. So maybe you take your rules and go, do I have to be totally inflexible? I got the sense that it's almost like you're looking for an excuse to pull him there. If you know that the double to center field, you know, I think you said it, walk, strike out. Then after that double, it was like, okay, now I got to pull him. It was like, I don't know that you do. You could have let him wiggle, get through six, might have been a different ballgame there, certainly. But as you said, Derek Law comes in, got a strikeout right away, and then put a kerosene spray all over everything and lit the match like the Joker with the money pile.
Yeah, that's fine to manage by the book, so to speak, that you wrote like before the game started. I just think let's have a feel here, right? And it's not like runners second and third because on 8 straight pitches, Trevor Williams is missed up and he's fatigued and he's running out of gas. I mean, go back and look at it. The walk to his second to last batter faced was a joke. I mean, umpiring in Major League Baseball this year in general has not been very good. But the walk was terrible. It was a strikeout. It was ruled a walk after 5 pitches, and then the first pitch missed for a double. You know, we're looking at a scenario at that point where I think he has shown no signs of really wearing down, and you're on to the bullpen. And it's a 5-run game, so whatever, no problem. But there's just been so much work. The bullpen is overworked. Guys don't get deep enough into games. And when you don't let Jake Irvin throw a 7th inning when he's cruised through 6 and has a low pitch count, when you go get Mackenzie Gore at 90 pitches in 5 innings the day before, like at some point you got to even that out. And here's Trevor Williams, I don't mean to say it this way, but whose arm doesn't matter as much to you, who's quite literally here to be the veteran that sometimes you allow to, you know, get knocked around a little bit, and you still don't give him the opportunity to work through it. I don't know. I thought it was a bad look for Davey yesterday. We talked a lot about this and about the upcoming series with the Dodgers, if you want to check that out, on the new episode of Bustin' Loose Baseball, which is the Nats podcast that we do as a show. Myself, Toby Altizer, Danny contributes, producer Darius in the mix. So go check out Bustin' Loose Baseball, wherever you get your podcasts, when we're done tonight, if you want to hear about the Nats. Speaking of the Nationals, Danny, they've got a debuting pitcher this evening. Lefty Mitchell Parker, 6'4", 240. All their pitchers in the minors, you pretty much have to be like 6'3 or bigger to pitch for the Nats.
They got a type now, don't they?
But this is the one guy who looks huge. like physically. He's not skinny. He's not limmy. This guy looks like he could play guard or tackle in the league with his 240-pound frame. Not a particularly great prospect. He's not in the top 20 via MLB pipeline. This is not a guy, I don't think, who is going to be in the rotation 2 or 3 years from now. But we probably said that about Jake Irvin when he got called up. And now all of a sudden he's throwing 98 and looks like a mainstay for them as a potential fourth starter type with power stuff from the right side. But Parker, 4 innings, 1 hit in his only start at AAA this year, led the minor leagues for the Nats system with 150 Ks last season. He's mostly like 91, 92 with his fastball, can run it up to 93, 94. It's mostly two pitches, fastball, curveball. I don't like the matchup for him or pretty much anyone else on the Nats staff against the Dodgers.
I was going to say, I don't like that matchup for any starter in Major League Baseball against the Dodgers.
But I'm excited for the kid, man. Yeah. 24 years old, had a good spring, getting a shot.
Yeah, let's go get tested, right? I mean, throw him right into the fire, and it's the hottest fire that Major League Baseball has to offer. This Dodgers lineup where Mookie Betts is unbelievable, Shohei Ohtani is unbelievable. Everybody hits, and they are nasty. But in terms of Parker, this is the thing I keep, the drum I keep beating for the Nationals. Sometimes you have to get lucky. You do all the scouting, you do all the things, and you try to build an organization, and you have minor leaguers that come up to the majors and help a little bit here and there. They need one of these unexpected gems. I keep calling it my Spencer Strider, who I know is on the injured list now and needs surgery, but nobody thought Spencer Strider was that dude, and he came up, and now he's a Cy Young candidate, perennially, when he's healthy and able to go. They need, I'm not saying Mitchell Parker's that guy, but you know what I mean? They need one of those organizational finds that nobody saw coming. They could use a bonus. They could use one of those freebies, for lack of a better way to say it. But it's a good sign that they've got guys that are graduating through their system that could come up and contribute at the major league level. Maybe not consistently, maybe not be frontline guys, as you kind of say, but, you know, just to provide some organizational depth, because you always need 6, 7, 8, 9 starters in a given year, and maybe more now with the rash of starter injuries that seem to be cropping up.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. When is James Wood going to get called up? That's really the prospect that everybody wants to see make the debut. Now, I would guess that there's no chance that James Wood plays his first game on the road. In fact, I was talking to someone about this, and they're like, dude, the Nats are not going to burn his debut away from Nationals Park. But interestingly, the Orioles just debuted Jackson Holliday at Fenway Park. They brought him up in Boston. He played his first couple of games at Fenway Park before they brought him home to Camden Yards. And maybe the logic, I don't know, maybe they were thinking like softer landing spot.
Yeah, Nats did it with Harper in L.A., remember?
Well, I remember that. This will sound dumb, but it feels like that was a different era almost, to be honest. But maybe he it doesn't matter because he was so popular. Everyone followed him like they would a player of this era. But like, we weren't live tweeting Bryce Harper at bats. Nobody was watching him at home on their smart TV because they've got the MLB app like I do, where you get all the minor league affiliates now in your living room. So it was a little different then. But you're right. I mean, there was enough hype with him. That was Strasburg-like, where they cost themselves like that first game being at home. In fact, I was at his first home game ever. I think it was against the Diamondbacks, if I remember, right after the Dodgers series. And I went to his first home game. And if I remember correctly, it was not a good turnout. Like, there was not a whole lot going on in terms of energy or excitement at the park. And I think they kind of watered it down a little bit because you'd just seen him play a few games on the road. Whereas the first look at him, the first chance to see this thing, you know, this player, that this maybe iconic athlete that everyone's telling you, this is a robot. This isn't a real baseball player. It's like going to a museum to see a dinosaur or something. Hmm. If you turn on your TV and you see him play a few times on the road, I don't know, maybe it takes away from it a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm sure it was like a midweek game too, you know, in the early spring. And by the way, May 1st, Grant Paulson, correct, Arizona Diamondbacks, a 5-1 loss. At home to the Diamondbacks that day.
I don't remember anything notable. Did Bryce even have a hit? I don't remember him doing anything.
He was 0-for-3. Had a huge game the next day. But I think that's the point. Is I understand they're always trying to protect the player and do these sorts of things. To try to have that guy in mind and his development and not overwhelm him. Sorry, the dude's in the fishbowl. It's too important to too many fans. I can't believe the Orioles called up Jackson Holliday on the road. And maybe there was an injury. Maybe it had to happen. But if you've got that level of excitement.
There wasn't, by the way, because that's one of the things that's weird. Like, they waited until basically the last day they could call him up to possibly still get rewarded with a first-round pick if he was to win or finish second in Rookie of the Year voting. And that's why I just thought the whole way they handled that was strange.
Same here. I would have called him up at home. I would have had a blast, had sellout crowds that are going ape, you know what, every time that dude steps to the plate, ovations and the like. It's just so rare to have that level of buzz for a big league regular season game that's not either opening day or must-win October baseball.
All right, let's get right now to the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app. Visit BetQL.com. Welcome onto the show, our good buddy John Walton, for what is going to be our Caps power play tonight.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
John, this is why you get into this business to call hockey games, I'd imagine. Plenty on the line tonight. Set the table for us, buddy.
Well, this is what they're looking at. It's the simplest scenario is the Capitals win two games and they'll be in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that is hardly straightforward from here, just because you're playing a Boston Bruins team tonight that's playing for an Atlantic Division title. They got a lot of scoring. They've got very good goaltending. And much like the game against Tampa Bay, you're going to have to block a lot of shots, and you're going to have to play some of your best hockey of the season. And you're going to have to do it tonight with a decimated defensive core. And that's, I think, maybe the biggest concern for this one tonight. But if you're able to get a forecheck going and you're able to produce offensive chances, take the game into their zone, you're going to feel a little bit better about your chances as you get on the train tonight to go to Philadelphia and a game of the Flyers tomorrow.
John, Grant and I were both in the building on Saturday. It was a blast. It was awesome. It was electric in there. Super, super fun. But from a play style perspective, or just kind of what they ended up being able to do against a good Tampa Bay team, what can they do Saturday that'll help them tonight?
Well, I think it's starting with block shots. I think that's a good way of getting the puck back. And we saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of hitting going on. One of their most physical games of the season, I thought, in the game against Tampa. So a good place to start. The one similarity that I really like, Danny, between what we saw Saturday and tonight is the fact that Boston, much like Tampa, they're not overly fast. They're very good. They score a lot. You've got David Pastrnak. You've got a deadly power play. They do a lot of things well. But they are not one of these teams that the Caps have had trouble with this season, where if they can skate really well, the Capitals don't generally fare as well in those kinds of games. This is similar to that. So I'm hoping that that's going to carry the day. This is the third time we've seen Boston, the Capitals, beat them at the Garden, and they lost a game beyond 60 minutes here. But both times it was close. I really think it's going to be a close game tonight. I think they're able to get those kind of offensive chances that they got against the Lightning. You'll know pretty early. If they're getting into the zone and they're able to force turnovers on getting in on the forecheck and pin some of their D-back along the backboards and get some pucks back in the offensive end, I think that would bode well against a team like Boston, where, you know, they don't have a lot to play for, and they certainly, you know, are getting ready for a first-round matchup. It's going to be a tough one. So they don't seem to care where they finish, and they don't seem to care who they play. So they're just kind of playing out the string. I hope the Caps can take advantage of that.
John Walton on the call, right at 7 o'clock, right here on the Fan, about 40 minutes away. Pre-game, as soon as we're done, at the bottom of the hour. Caps, in their second-to-last game of the season, got to get 2 points to set themselves up in good shape for a win-and-in scenario tomorrow. John, you mentioned the blue line. I want to drill down on Vincent Iorio, who's going to be playing in what is now his eighth career game tonight. Lucas Johansson, who's been called up, and you can't really hide him anymore. He's going to have to log minutes. And then Dylan McIlrath, who they've called up, who's massive, 6'5", 240, played in 71 Calder Cup playoff games, but, you know, has been a journeyman, not much more than that, to be fair, in the NHL. I mean, what roles, how much can they kind of avoid big minutes for those guys and just kind of paint the picture of the defense right now?
Yeah, and I think it's different, Grant, too, between what you might see tonight and tomorrow, and I'll explain how I mean that. You're going to see Dylan McIlrath play tonight, and Lucas Johansson will be a healthy scratch, but that could easily be reversed tomorrow. You've got Dylan, who is a veteran, yes, knows his role, and a guy who can give you maybe 10 or 11 minutes, he's not very fast. And that's the one real hindrance against his game. When you have last change tonight, Spencer Carberry can kind of shelter that a little bit and pick spots for him to be able to go out, be effective. You may not get that opportunity tomorrow. Now, Lucas Johansson is a guy who is a better skater. The problem with him is he's been out of action for more than a week. He got called up. He hasn't played. And now you potentially throw him into game 82 with a playoff spot on the line and being one of your six guys you go to. But you're hoping that young legs, fresh legs, and good skating might give you a chance there. That's me just guessing for tomorrow, but I think there's at least a chance that you might use them both. And then Vinny Iorio, as you talked about, he's going to get a decent amount of time tonight. You know, he was in the 9-10 minute range against Tampa. He was up at 11-12. Now you're maybe it's 13-14 tonight because you're going to need to make up for an entire 60 minutes. You had Nick Jensen for the first period, and at the time he went down on Saturday, he was actually had more time than John Carlson did. So it's going to flip a little bit tonight. Martin Ferravari, who had more than 27 minutes in the game on Saturday, and was really funny about it in the room talking with reporters. Like, I don't know how John Carlson does this every night, but he's going to be called upon to do it again too. So I think you add all of that up, and they're going to have to just play it shift by shift, period by period, get a win tonight, and then see if you can't turn that into 2 points again tomorrow and get in the postseason.
John Walton with us here on G&D. You mentioned Nick Jensen. Scary scene on Saturday, and I know it's hockey. We don't get much details. I think they will admit he played in the game on Saturday in terms of disclosing injuries and the like, but what are we hearing, and what's the prognosis, and when might we see him on the ice again?
Good question. I feel like we got a good little bit of news today on Rasmus Sandin because he actually skated today. Jensen did not skate today. Neither one will play tomorrow. We already know that. The question would be if the Capitals are fortunate enough to get into a game one on the weekend, wherever they play and whomever it is, whatever seed they end up being, they still could finish third if everything broke right. Then you would try to see maybe if they can go through a skate Thursday, Friday, get ready for the weekend. Sandin, I think, is ahead of where Jensen is. We've seen Nick at the complex. He walks around. He looks fine. I mean, as you see him walking around, wouldn't know anything had happened. I'd like to think that's encouraging, but we haven't seen him back on the ice. I think once we do, and if the Capitals are able to win tonight, tomorrow, it's going to be an off day Wednesday. If you get back at it on Thursday because you're in the playoffs and you see Jensen out there and skating, then I'd say, well, maybe he's got a chance to play on the weekend and come back for game one. But until we see that, I think getting Sandin back would be huge. And that seems to be at least a stronger possibility right now.
John, other storylines or any kind of statistical nuggets we need to know about the Bruins, areas to avoid with them?
I think their power play is very good. I mean, David Pastrnak is having a great year. Brad Marchand is climbing their scoring charts and, rounding out a Hall of Fame career here by the time he's all said and done. But so you're contending with a lot of guys up front that can hurt you offensively. That's the kind of stuff that's going to put pressure on the D. I mean, to me, guys, the thing that I'm going to be watching as we get started here is, can the Capitals they're not ever going to have, 17, 18 first period shots. That's just not who they are. But if they have 8, 9, 10, 11, and you see them pressing their D core, they've got some inexperienced guys back there. They had a game against Pittsburgh in which they won and helped out the Capitals on Saturday, but they proved to be pretty exploitable in between the dots. Tampa did the same thing, and I think that's what I'm going to be looking at here the most. Can Dylan Strome get to the interior? Can TJ Oshie find his way in between the dots? And guys, the young guys, I mean, when you get to this time of the year, everybody's beat up and everybody's tired and you're on adrenaline. But Connor McMichael and Henrik Lapierre, the young guys who are coming off a Calder Cup title in Hershey, they played in huge, huge games, one level down. They've been in this playoff hunt all the way through. I look at the young legs and say, listen, those are the guys that if Henrik's can come up with a big goal, a big moment, a big pass, Alexei Protas too, try and find a way to get to the interior against a Boston D court that might let you get there and get those quality chances, not just those first chances. Jeremy Swayman's a goalie tonight for Boston. He's good. But if you get second chances on him, just like any goalie, you're going to have a chance to win. And I think those are the things, going to the top of the goal crease, getting those pucks turned over when you got the chance, and try and get that to go. That's how they win this game tonight.
John, awesome with us as always, but have a great call tonight. And please do me a favor and call a Capitals win.
I want that more than anything, fellas. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
There's John Walton, voice of the Caps. Programming note, the game's actually on 99.1 tonight because you got the Nats late night against the Dodgers. So rather than making everyone find another station midway through, we are going to 99.1 for the Capitals at the top of the hour. Toby has overtime coming up in just a few minutes right here on The Fan. Speaking of Toby, if you want to hear a preview of the Nats-Dodgers series or any thoughts on the Nationals as we say goodbye tonight, new episode of Bustin' Loose Baseball did drop for you. And speaking of podcasts, thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio. If you missed any part of today's show, including Danny, the debut of 10 questions in 10 days as we count down to the NFL draft.
That was a lot of fun. We're going to do that all week long and then next week as well to get us ready. It's finally here. I mean, it's not here, but it's here. Does that make sense? It's not like in 3 months. It's not like the normal October looking at draft boards because Washington's 3-7. This is now the actual time. Interviews are being conducted. Jaden Daniels is in town. Drake May will be here tomorrow. All the quarterbacks you could eat are around Ashburn here this week. So, like, final decisions are happening. It's really here.
Enjoy your evenings. Thanks for checking us out. If you are going to be watching the Caps tonight, going over to Monumental 2.
Old cast, baby.
And enjoy the old cast. I'm hanging out with Devontae Smith-Pelly and Tariq El-Bashir. For Darius and Ryan in our D.C. studios with Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. Thank you for listening. We are back at it at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Overtime is next.
Thank you for coming.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.